From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the Acura TL with Bluetooth phone connectivity. Learn more at Acura.com.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Everybody who listens to Only a Game emailed this week. They were all responding to producer Karen Given's story about the half marathon she ran, and each of them took up Karen's challenge to find a better name for the 13-mile race than half marathon. Frederick Ames, who hears the program on WAMC in Albany, New York, Dan Dufour, Chuck Piotrowski of Rutland, Vermont, and Lisa Zolnowski, who hears Only a Game on WBFO in Buffalo, all suggested Triska Decathon, or Triska Decker, or something along that line. Oliver Cox also invoked a Greek root by suggesting that the race should be called the Mesothon, meso meaning middle. Thomas Reitz, who hears the program on WCBE in Columbus, Ohio, who must come from another part of Greece, claims miso means half, and he wants to call the race the miso. Dave Austin, who listens to WXXI in Rochester, New York, has combined the Roman numeral X with the number 3 to come up with 13. He informed us that he'd be running an X3 in Santa Fe next Thanksgiving. A New Hampshire Public Radio listener, Dennis Martino, wants to call the race the Parathon, figuring that makes the same sense as terms like paralegal and paraprofessional. Ron Johnson noted that the music at the end of Karen's story was halfway to paradise and suggested that the half marathon should be called the Paradise Marathon. So you got your para in there. That's pretty clever. Mary M. Muldoon, a WBUR listener, sent in several candidates, one of which is the Common Sense or Tom Paine race, since running 13 miles makes a lot more sense to her than running 26 miles does. Ms. Muldoon also suggested the Baker's Dozen race and the People's Race, quote, since it seems doable for her, maybe. Finally, Matt Rush, who hears Only a Game on WFYI in Indianapolis, wrote, Karen's story reminded me how good I felt after completing my first half marathon. Thanks for bringing back some good memories. And by the way, Karen, don't run a marathon. They are addictive, and I haven't been able to break the addiction in 14 years. You can reach us through our website, onlyagame.org, and your note doesn't have to be about half marathons. Our email address is onlyagame@wbur.bu.edu. You can leave a message on the listener line by calling 617-353-1860. The National League Central Division is now home to a three-team race. The St. Louis Cardinals, despite playing most of the season with a sub-500 record, have surged the last 2 weeks. Their turnaround began with the arrival of help from an unlikely, though not totally unfamiliar, source. Only a Game's Greg Eklund reports.
Very little waiting out of gate 4 and gate 5 on Clark. Very little waiting out of gate 4 and gate 5.
As another weeknight sellout of more than 42,000 fans filed into Busch Stadium for a St. Louis Cardinals home game, a large dusty crater sits across the street, side of the old Busch Stadium, since demolished by a wrecking ball. That ballpark was once the scene of Rick Ankiel's worst nightmare. 7 years ago, the 21-year-old rookie pitcher threw a major league record 5 wild pitches in the third inning of the division series opener against Atlanta. His promising career as a power pitcher started to unravel even after he had won 11 games with 194 strikeouts in 175 innings. Now, Ankiel admits there's an eerie feeling when he looks across the street, but he says that doesn't matter now.
It's kind of strange, that's for sure, but I don't look into the past, and right now I speak about the present, and I'm certainly happy about what I'm doing, so...
What Ankiel has done the last 2 weeks is one of the more remarkable stories in Major League Baseball this season. After Ankiel's mound struggles continued for 4 years, he declared his pitching days over in the spring of 2005. Instead, if a path were to lead him back to the majors, it would be as an everyday player. Ankiel spent his first season as a hitter in Class A and Double A, then missed all of last year with a knee injury. This year, after signing a contract as a minor league free agent, Ankiel went to spring training with the Cardinals before he was sent down to play at Memphis, the Cardinals' Triple A club. With the Memphis Redbirds, Ankiel paced the Pacific Coast League in homers with 32 and was tied for second in the league with 89 RBI. As a result, Ankiel's production got him the promotion he was looking for. So 2 years after leaving the mound as a power pitcher, Ankiel is back in the big leagues as a power hitter.
I hope in time I can turn it into being an all-around hitter and not just a power guy, so we'll see.
No hits. Ankiel out to deep right field, has a chance to leave the ballpark, it's gone! A three-run shot for Rick Ankiel back in the major leagues. Remarkable.
On August 9th, the first day of his return to the majors, Ankiel homered against the San Diego Padres. Then, 2 days later, he hit two out in a game against the Los Angeles Dodgers. The transition was complete. During spring training, third-year Cardinals hitting coach Hal McCray saw the signs that Ankiel was potentially a big-league slugger. Now, McCray knows any conversation with Ankiel will not include anything about his history on the mound.
He doesn't have the pitcher's mentality, and he's a great athlete. Runs well, throws well, he's got size and strength. If you never saw him play, you never knew nothing about him, you wouldn't think this guy was a pitcher.
Rick Ankiel!
Ankiel!
Hey, Rick!
In this tradition-rich baseball town, the fans haven't forgotten Ankiel's pitching history, but they are forgiving. Rod Herrenbrook of Wildwood, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis, recently bought Ankiel jerseys for his wife Debbie and his 8-year-old son Nick. Rod Herrenbrook attended the playoff opener in 2000. He also witnessed Ankiel's first homer in his return to the big leagues.
It was pretty unbelievable. I mean, you know, the guy, it's a great story of determination and just hanging in there and doing what you believe. So, you know, it's like the natural or something like that, you know.
The Cardinals this season have trudged through a campaign marked by injuries to two of their top starting pitchers, Chris Carpenter and Mark Mulder, and their starting second baseman, Adam Kennedy. The team lost relief pitcher Josh Hancock, who was killed in an April traffic accident. And on the day Ankiel was promoted, utility player Scott Spezio was placed on the restricted list because of personal issues. Fans like Herrenbrook believe Ankiel has given the Cardinals a lift.
You know, he kind of gave us a spark. We were kind of lackluster for a while. He came up, and it seemed like it kind of inspired some people. Definitely inspired the crowd.
After Ankiel's promotion, the Cardinals put together a 5-game winning streak, their longest of the season. With a new role at age 28, Ankiel's not quite ready to say that he feels like a rookie again.
I guess somewhere in the middle. I wouldn't say I'm necessarily a veteran, but I don't feel like a rookie either. So it's been fun. I mean, when you come out here and contribute and do your part of the job and the team wins, it makes it special.
The Cardinals hope Ankiel's special story, which team notes refer to as one for Hollywood, continues through September, when St. Louis will play a total of 8 games against division rivals Chicago and Milwaukee. For Only a Game, I'm Greg Eklund in St. Louis.
Skiing is probably the last thing most people think of when it's 80 degrees and sunny, but some Westerners just can't get snow off the brain, ever. Among them are some Washington State diehards who tally impressive streaks of year-round skiing without leaving the lower 48. Correspondent Tom Bonsi recently grabbed his ski poles and met the people who carve turns all year round.
Down there. We're at a backcountry snowfield in Mount Rainier National Park for Slush Cup 2007. Never heard of it? Neither had I until last month. It's a highlight on the calendar of a small but growing cohort of year-round skiers. The Slush Cup takes place when a pond at the foot of Pinnacle Glacier is about half melted out. The object is to ski down the hill and skim across the surface of the pond to the opposite shore. Go too fast, and you crash up onto a rocky beach. But with too little momentum, you take a dip in ice-cold water. This is the 5th annual Slush Cup for Jeanette Morrison of Puyallup, Washington. She stays dry, so it's hard to argue with her rationale for skiing through the warm season.
Oh my gosh, the best time of the year to ski is in the spring and summer because you've got warm conditions. You don't have to worry about being cold. You don't have to pack as much stuff. It's not as hard.
There is the hike in. This one's a mile and a half. Morrison says the cruelest months for the year-round skier come in a bit.
September, October, when there's no new snow, and then we really have to hunt. But we do have our secret stashes, someplace that we know where to go to find snow that we keep secret, and then we go there.
Morrison took up backcountry skiing in midlife. The 57-year-old homemaker appears to be making up for lost time. Morrison has gone on at least one ski trip every month for the last 12 and a half years. That has her tied for the third longest skiing streak in the West, according to the unofficial tally kept by turnsallyear.com. Charles Eldridge is the webmaster.
Everybody has their own specific criteria for what counts as skiing in a particular month. Is it a countable ski trip or not? The most widespread standard would probably be a minimum of 1,000 vertical feet of skiing.
Timberline Ski Area, high on Mount Hood, Oregon, has that and operates year-round. But Eldridge says the lifts make it too easy for some backcountry skiers. On occasion, they go to great lengths to keep a streak going.
People skiing, say, in August or September, skiing sand dunes in eastern Washington, for example. You know, if they're going to go to the effort to go out and hike up these sand dunes and ski down them, I give them credit for getting their turns in that way.
Danny Miller hasn't done anything like that. The friendly redhead did barely escape a howling blizzard on Mount Rainier once. Miller makes his living as a stage actor in suburban Seattle.
Of the few things that I would most identify with what I love to do in life, skiing's, of course, way up there. It would have to be, or I wouldn't be obsessed enough to do this.
Miller's streak is at 165 months in a row of skiing without leaving the West. That puts him in second place behind a Colorado man who's at 334 months.
At first, it was just, let's see if I can do it year-round. And then the bigger it gets, the more you feel the weight of doing it and how big a decision it would be to stop.
Miller started skiing in his 20s. It took a few years for him to get good at it. And then he says something snapped.
I wonder if it's not because it's kind of the closest to flying, I think, that you can get. You don't have any equipment. You're not in a plane or in a car or a motorcycle or anything. It's just you can almost, you know, not even notice you have two little sticks on your feet.
Miller says he gets asked a lot, how long can he keep the streak going? First, he says he has no idea. And then he says he'll keep going until it stops being fun and starts being a chore. For Only a Game, I'm Tom Bonsi at Pinnacle Glacier in Mount Rainier National Park.
Nice.
Demolition derbies have been around for as long as many racetracks and some county fairs have. This highly interactive event, in which cars collide until only one is left moving, has been a devastating diversion. But as Ron Schachter reports from Rockford, Illinois, one racetrack has given a new twist to the standard contest of twisted metal.
Amanda and Alan Melker look over a group of freshly painted vehicles on a grassy lot next to Rockford Speedway. On this summer Saturday night, they seem like any other married couple searching for a good buy on a used car.
Take that one on you.
Imperial? Yeah. At least they have seat belts. I feel a little safer.
But the cars here are very used, just imported from the local junkyard, in fact. And the Melkers are no longer married. They'll need those seat belts in 2 hours when they square off against each other and six additional ex-couples in the second annual Divorcee Demolition Derby. Alan signed up a few weeks ago, and he can count the ways he loves this contest.
Safe way to put a dent in the side of your ex-wife's car. Legally. I want that trophy. Maybe we'll get to keep the cars, too, after we're done.
Trouble is, he didn't mention his plans to Amanda until this afternoon.
He didn't tell me till a couple hours ago. I need you to do something for me. Well, what do you need? Go to the races with me tonight. Okay, and, oh, by the way, we're in a demo derby.
Amanda says that kind of communication was par for the course during their 3-year marriage. So she found a last-minute babysitter, told her young daughter that mommy and daddy were going to bump into each other with cars, but just for fun, and headed to the racetrack. Rockford Speedway is one of about 100 grassroots tracks around the country that serve as minor league venues of NASCAR racing. but the Speedway has also earned a reputation for more innovative events, such as its Figure 8 trailer race of destruction. Earlier this season, teams of stock cars pushed around a 4-foot-wide black and white metal soccer ball. General Manager Greg McKern says that tonight's demo derby was an idea whose time had come.
There's all these divorced people. I mean, it's sad to say in America, but there are a lot of divorced people out there. So we decided we're going to try to divorce a demo derby. Last year we did it on a Wednesday night, which is kind of our R&D night to test out different ideas. And the crowd response was huge to it. It was our biggest Wednesday night crowd. So this year we put it on a Saturday night and brought it into the prime time, if you will.
Speedway owner David Deary adds that he's had to make some extra accommodations for this event.
The Demolition Derby is probably one of the fiercest events in motorsports. If you'd ever watched a Demo Derby and you could concentrate on the drivers, you'll see the force and the G-forces that they take in these hits. So what we need to convey to these participants tonight is, you know, we're gonna stretch out prior to the event. We're gonna use our necks and get real loose the best we can. And since these people are mostly rookies, we're gonna pad their cars, some of the doors, some of the areas that their limbs will fly actually when they get hit.
Across town, Dr. Lisa Breisch has worked the past 10 years as a marriage counselor. She describes her own concerns about the Divorcee Derby.
Some couples may have a lot of unresolved issues from the marriage, and it could be rather tricky. And if they are very angry at each other or are not in a healthy place, things could kind of get dangerous, actually, because you're stirring up old unresolved feelings. Or it could be actually fun and kind of a bonding experience, depending on the couple.
The drivers here seem to fit the latter category. They exchange quips and pleasantries while spray painting decorations on their chosen cars, which have been colored blue for boys and pink for girls. The numbers on the side doors range from 1 to 5, with a 3.2 and 3.5 thrown in, representing the years the competitors stayed hitched. Amanda Melker says she's even received some ex-husbandly advice from Alan.
He said, go in reverse. That's what he told me. Just go in reverse and save your front end. That was his words of wisdom to me.
One rival, two cars down, plans on taking a more direct approach and taking no prisoners.
Oh, just floor it and go. Get them as hard as I can.
Forward or backward?
Both.
The banter stops and the faces get sober when Deary gives a literal crash course in what's down the road.
There's two parts of your body that'll get hurt in this event. Your neck and your hands. So when you're backing up or when you're going to hit somebody, get your hands off the wheel. Because if your wheel hits the car or another wall or whatever, the wheel will spin. Don't put your thumbs inside. Keep them on the outside. Never grab the wheel. Never grab the wheel.
After the lesson, the ex-couples don their helmets and start their engines.
For 3.2 years, it was Jim and Sarah Powers. She's bossy and he's lazy. Obviously, that one wasn't going to work. Then for a whole 3 years, Alvin and Amanda Melker. Well, he was a Bear fan. She was a Packer fan.
The drivers line up along the finish line with the rear ends of their cars directly across from those of their ex-spouses. Just as they shared the first dance at their weddings, they'll get the first crack at each other here. After that, it's a free-for-all. Almost 2,000 fans watch the collisions of pink and blue. After a slow start, the drivers become more aggressive, and the contest turns into a 15-minute mechanical melee. The frequent contact, dragging bumpers, and spinning wheels become metaphors for marriages gone awry as the combatants hurtle backwards and personally deliver the messages they've scrawled on their fenders. Love, hate. Call 911. Have a nice day. Some ex-wives have emblazoned large dollar signs on their hoods, reminders of alimony past due. But it soon becomes clear that this is not just a battle of the exes, but a battle of the sexes.
How many of you think the women are going to win? How many of you want to see the men pulled off this year?
When the remaining two blue cars make a head-on charge into each other, the field is left to the women for the second year in a row.
The three of them all died simultaneously. All three women are the winners tonight.
Amanda Bielefleet in car number 5 is among that trio. Bielefleet races the minor league NASCAR circuit here on Wednesday nights, but she says she's found a new love.
I love totaling cars.
Have you ever had a collision before in your driving days?
Nope, never.
No?
And come out here now, I'd like to hit cars.
Marriage counselor Lisa Bryce suggests that the demo derby would be well served if a psychologist were present, along with the tow truck drivers and EMTs.
I think afterwards that people should do some things about how this felt. How was this experience for them before, during, and after? And how has this affected their relationship with their ex afterwards?
Bryce may soon get her wish. She's thinking of entering next year's Divorcee Demo Derby with her own ex. For Only a Game, I'm Ron Schachter in Rockford, Illinois.
Thanks for listening to Only a Game. Please check your local listings for the NPR station nearest you to carry our show, and please visit our website, onlyagame.org.